Do you remember what you said to me when I told you that Ziggy was going to try to hit 90 miles an hour in a batting cage on Thursday?
Not a chance.
That's what I said.
Okay, Ziggy, I got a question for you. Are you lefty or righty?
I'm not quite sure. I guess I'll find out tomorrow.
So, yeah, you have no chance. Like, what's the bet?
What do you shoot the puck with? I'm a righty.
Which side? Say it with confidence. I'm hitting right-handed.
I'm hitting right tomorrow. Well, I'll try right, and if it doesn't work, I'll go left. Isn't that what the major league player
does? That's not anywhere near what a major league player does. I can't hit right-handed. Oh. I just turn around left-handed. No, it does not work that way.
I don't think you did much to gain the confidence of Kevin Barker on yesterday's show as we get set for the batting cage visit later this morning.
Do you think he's going to be able to help me? Honestly.
Do you think he's going to show up?
Isn't he on air like this afternoon?
Yeah, 2:00, Baseball Central with Jeff Blair.
There's no way he's getting out to Vaughn. Or Richmond. Where are we going?
We're going to Vaughan. The city above Toronto. The city of Vaughan. And by the way, that jingle's going to be in your head for the rest of the day. And I'm not sorry about it.
Is that what it says on the city name? The city above Toronto?
No, it's the old radio jingle. The city above Toronto. The city of Vaughan. No, you don't.
No one knows what that is.
Yes, they do.
Not one listener knows that jingle.
Text to 590-590 if you know the city of Vaughan
jingle.
Don't
just text in because you're taking Scotty's side like every one of our listeners does because I see it on Twitter.
Everybody knows the city of Vaughan's jingle. I don't know if they've gone with it recently, but it was like every stop set on Sportsnet 590 The Fan 15 years ago, you'd hear it. Absolutely.
I've never heard that ever before.
Well, that's because you were living in Raleigh. Because fax machines were getting jammed
Lowell.
In Buffalo.
You were living in Lowell,
Massachusetts. Oh, my God.
Everybody takes your side. I open up my Twitter sometimes, and it's they at me, and they say, is that what I say? They at me?
They at you, and yeah. You should say, don't at me. With every take you have, every opinion you have, don't at me.
No, I get these messages on Twitter, like people upset at me and then like, go Scotty. I'm like, go Scotty. He's not doing anything. I'm the one in the batting cage. I'm the one hitting the ball. Not you. Me. And they're coming at me saying, whatever, all this stuff. I'm like, no, Scotty's not doing anything. So he's going there to watch.
I'm going to stand in.
You're standing in. But you don't have anything on the line.
That's correct. Yeah, I don't have to grow the circle beard if I don't get a hit. I have gotten more information on how this is all going to play out.
I've got something for you today. I don't know if I can say it on the air, though. I don't want to ruin what I have. I have a little... I got some beta yesterday on what to do. I don't know if you're going to be good with it.
You have to swing the bat.
Yeah,
you're not.
Thank you. I know I have to swing the bat.
Chuck remembers the jingle, by the way, where the texts are starting to come in.
Chuck remembers the jingle. Yeah. Okay, Chuck.
I believe Chuck and I know what's up.
Where's Chuck from?
He didn't Does say. He have a, it's a 905
well, there
number.
There you go. Well, maybe 905. Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to let you in on a secret. They can get us on the Amplitude Module. That's the AM band in Oakville or Burlington. Many, Durham, Oshawa. They can get us on the 590 band. They can hear the Vaughn ad.
I know, but I feel better.
All over the place.
I feel better if it's Chuck or Chucky. Who was it?
Chuck.
I feel better that Chuck's from a 905. Charles. No, I got some information yesterday. One suggestion was...
Who are these people?
Don't worry about it.
No, you got too
just
many secret
just
people.
Don't worry about it, okay?
You got too don't many people in your life. Who
just don't worry about it.
It's not the people who thought Tanner Roark should start game 3 of a playoff series for the Blue Jays.
Maybe. It might be from the group chat. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just going to say this. One suggested I bunt. He said, hey, I don't like
swing
the chances of you hitting
the bat.
You said forward swing motion. So I wanted to say, does a bunt count? And I said, how close do I get my hands to the ball? And they said, pretty close. Like, you're bringing injury into the picture if I go to try to bunt.
Yeah, I don't
want
you.
Trust me.
I don't want you pinching your index finger against the bat.
Yeah, the fingers. Yeah, I already have surgery coming up in 2 weeks on my left hand. Worst thing, I don't need surgery on my right hand as well.
Although you're there.
No.
Doc, I'm hands, here. Could you do both?
Both hands tied up. That could be a problem. That could be a big problem.
Make for a long day.
What's that?
Well, surgery on both hands would make for a longer day, but you're there already. I mean,
I meant after the surgery, like, then you're in trouble. So that was the one suggestion, was to bunt, but then they said, watch your fingers, because that could turn out really bad.
But we've already discussed that bunting is not on the table.
We were discussing. We never discussed this.
No, I've said for days, Silent Vic can yay or nay this if I'm wrong, and he's your friend. He's going to take your side where and when he can. I've said you need to swing the bat.
I don't hear any yes or no's yet. You know what?
Yeah.
That's so. Anyways, that was one suggestion. The next suggestion I thought was really interesting. This one was, so the suggestion was, don't start at 50 and work your way up. Go right to 90.
So tear your oblique right away.
Yep.
And the morning.
Yep, my friend said, go with 90. If you start with 50, there's no way you get to 90. If it comes in 90, hit one right away, because you won't. He said timing's going to be the biggest problem. Not the speed of the pitches or anything. He said timing is going to really mess you up. If you start with 50, there's no way you get to 90.
Well, you know you have an ally. There's somebody out there who believes in you. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, Kevin Barker's co-host on Baseball Central, Jeff Blair.
Oh, my good buddy, Jeffy.
He's a big believer in Ziggy.
But see, can you hit 90?
Me?
Yeah.
No. But unlike Mike Zigomanis, one, I'm not a real good golfer. He's a good golfer.
What's that got to do with it?
Got hand-eye happening. Two, he played in the NHL, and his strength was the face-off guy. So he's got quick wrists, strong forearms. I don't know, man. I got to tell you, 10 pitches for Ziggy. What's the big deal? He's going to hit
10 pitches.
10 pitches. He's going to. You guys, this sounds like people are making.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Within three pitches, he's made solid contact. Three pitches. He might even do it after the first pitch. He might even make contact with the second.
Well, I'm assuming too, but it depends on if he gets some practice swing.
He's an athlete. He's a freaking athlete.
Yes, Jeffy.
I think you only need one pitch by the sound of it. One pitch.
That's all I need. I got Jeff behind me now. Now I'm excited. That's all I need. It was a little confidence in me. Confidence will go a long way.
Confidence is everything. Confidence is everything.
Yeah, I got forearms. I'm an athlete. I used to take face-offs in the NHL. Of course I can do this.
You've got forearms. And everybody
forearms.
Else walking around doesn't?
Offs. I got forearms. I used to take face. I'm an athlete. Of course I can do this. You're trying to talk me out of it.
Right.
I know I can do this now.
Yeah.
I feel like this is Kramer and Elaine from Seinfeld.
Maybe
when I feel like this is Kramer when he goes to Seinfeld saying, you can run a company. And she comes with the huge... anyway.
Oh, this is when he's doing the karate with the 8-year-olds,
yeah,
and then she comes up with the urban sombrero. Yeah. Yeah. The urban sombrero.
I can do this. Yeah. The scene is Kramer talks and says, hey, you can run a company. And then he talks about the karate and how he's like this kung fu master, whatever he's involved in. And then Elaine actually finds him in his karate class
with 8-year-olds
fighting 8-year-olds.
Is that when Jay Peterman went to Burma?
Yes. And, yes, but that's the whole thing.
You may know it as Myanmar, but it will always be Burma to me.
Yeah. So, hey.
Maybe Doris can pour you a bowl of Wheaties right now, get you set, because we're doing this later on this morning. So here's how it's going to play out. Sportsnet is sending its top camera people. We have apparently hired an audio
top
person.
Camera people? We're on radio only.
Oh, no,
why are
brother.
We bringing this on camera?
Oh, no, brother. This is we will announce how this all went down tomorrow morning.
I don't like all the extras.
And
I just want to go.
Next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, a portion of what went down will be released on our social media platforms.
So this is taking a turn really quickly. I thought it was just you and me going to the batting cage and we're just going to go, and now all of a sudden it's on. Now this is adding pressure to me.
Well, look,
I don't know anymore.
This is also the first time that our entire show is going to be together in 7 months. Silk Gentile is making the trip for it. I don't think he's left his basement since the end of March, like quite literally. I don't know if he's left his house. So
He goes to Costco.
He's jumping in the minivan. He's jumping in the minivan.
No, he takes the minivan to Costco. You don't think he's left the basement? For sure. He's going to buy his food at Costco. You didn't know he was a Costco guy?
Oh, I know. He's got Costco written all over
him. He pulls up the minivan to Costco. The sliding door goes open and it takes 3 hours to load the car. Like, honestly.
He's buying the big tins of beef.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. Pasta by like the potatoes. I don't know. What does pasta come in? He makes his own potatoes.
He's probably
I was going to say pasta sauce. He makes his own pasta sauce.
If the apocalypse happens, we're going to his house and asking for some toilet paper, yeah. Right? Because he's got rules.
He's got toilet paper. He's got he's got like 300 bottles of cans of tomato sauce, homemade for sure, against the wall. Guaranteed right now, if we look at his desk in his basement, it's lined with tomato sauce.
He's got the coast of Vancouver Island worth of tuna cans.
Nah, he doesn't look like a tuna guy to me.
I don't know, but he's going to be there. He's going to be there. Barker's going to be there. It'll be you and me and Hayden and Silent Vic. I think Hugh's going to pull out an old Expos jersey or something. So we'll take our hacks today.
We're not going to wear Sportsnet gear.
We have.
If I'm going to be on TV.
Yes, we have Sportsnet gear.
So Sportsnet gear will be there.
Because
I'm going to wear my jersey then, or I'm not wearing my jersey.
Well, you can do both.
No, I'm not doing both. I want to know what I need to wear. This is a lot, you know that?
I'm going to tell
you. You're showing up and having a good time today. You're going to have a beer. I'm showing up. I got to perform.
I'm telling you what I'm doing. I'm wearing my Sportsnet golf shirt with my track pants because you know I have been track pant guy for 7 months and I am not breaking my streak for an athletic endeavor. If there's ever a time where I actually should be wearing track pants, it's for an athletic endeavor, and that's what this is. So I'm going to wear my Sportsnet golf shirt with my track pants. I could pull out the cleats. And I'm also going to go to my basement, into my storage unit, and look for it. And if I find it, which I believe I will because I think I know where it is, I'm going to pull out my gray Road Chicago Cubs Sammy Sosa jersey from about 20 years ago.
I think you should wear the Sammy Sosa jersey today. I don't know where my baseball jerseys are. That's the problem. I gave a quick look yesterday. I couldn't find them.
Your father, Michael McGivney, those wouldn't fit anymore anyway.
Those, but I've got a Jays. I've got a couple. You know which one I used to wear? I used to wear Trot Nixon. I had a Trot Nixon jersey. Do you know who that is?
I absolutely wore number 7 for the Red Sox.
Yeah, number 7, because I was 7 with the Loch Monsters. So my buddy thought it would be funny. Well, buddy, Andrew Raycroft. Me and him would go to a Red Sox game. He was playing with the Bruins.
Yeah.
I was playing in Lowell, which was half hour outside of the city. One day we went to the game. We have box seats. Like, you can't get them. You can't even buy them. You got to know one of 30 families to get in these box seats. We get box seats free. And he's like, they're box seats. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And he goes, wouldn't you rather sit in the bleacher seats? I go, well, we don't have bleacher seats. We sell and trade our box seats for like $20 bleacher seats because you know how hard it is to get a ticket in Fenway?
So this family that owns this private box that has given you two tickets to sit in that box, you've now handed it off to some Joe who's going to sell it to whoever, and they're going to show up?
This is actually a good story. We should have had Razor on for this. We gave up our box seats for bleacher seats for a game one time, went and bought jerseys. He had number 33. Veritek?
Jason Veritek. They're a great catcher. Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Come on. That's pretty good for numbers. That's 20 years ago.
Yeah, and you hockey nerds will love this. Jason Veritek actually had a C on the left sleeve of his jersey.
Or
actually right above the Boston or the Red Sox. Yeah, he was the captain of the team.
Yeah, so he was a captain, 33. So he bought these jerseys. I don't know how we started talking about jerseys we're talking about. Yeah, so I had a Trot Nixon, number 7. I can't find it. There was another Red Sox player that I dressed up as for Halloween.
Doug Minkiewicz.
Who do you think I dressed up as for Halloween?
Manny Ramirez, no.
My hair? I didn't touch my hair. It was like off the shoulders long.
Oh, Silent Vic. I got it. Johnny Damon. Yes.
I have a Johnny Damon jersey.
And you know what we need to
do
now?
How about this? I have all the gear. So Ray Kroft hooked me up with a guy from the Red Sox. I got the socks. I got all of his gear. I got all of his gear, like his pants, everything. And I showed up at our Halloween party. I had to get my own shoes, but I had his pants. I had his socks up. I had everything.
You were Johnny Damon at a Halloween party.
Yeah, I was actually Johnny Damon with all of Johnny Damon's gear, like everything.
All right. Well, that sounds good. What we need to do today is we need to get Johnny Damon on the show, and we'll compare the progression of your respective salads up top. Could you still do the Johnny Damon?
I actually have a better story. Should we tell it now? When's Halloween? It's coming up, right?
Yeah, typically, in my experience, has fallen on the 31st of October.
I don't know what month it is or what day it is.
In my 41 years existing.
Did you realize?
It's COVID-19. Anything's possible now.
Do you know we're in October? Yeah, come on.
It's two Saturdays from now. It's 2 weeks Saturday.
Okay, we'll tell the Johnny Damon story then.
All right. Well, don't forget, though. I got no short-term
memory.
You write
it down. I'm going to forget, too.
All right.
Silent Vic. Tell Silent Vic to write it
down. Did you hear Bill Foley, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, guesting yesterday on a Las Vegas radio station? And on more than one occasion. So, you know, if a guy says it once, you know, did I just hear that? Did he mean to say what he just said? Is there anything to this? Like, if he says it once, if he says it twice or more than twice, then you start to wonder, okay, is he sharing some information that he's privy to? And he would be as one of the owners of the NHL of franchises. Is he sharing some information that perhaps shouldn't be out yet? But man, he seems strong on this. He seems confident about this. Bill Foley, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, thinks there is going to be a Canadian division whenever it is the NHL season resumes. And he thinks that will be in February. So we're still 3.5. In Bill Foley's world, we're still 3.5, 4 months away from the start of the next NHL season. And in Bill Foley's world, the 7 Canadian teams are going to make up an entire division because of border crossing restrictions and the quarantine stuff, all that COVID-19 related stuff. And so I put out a troll poll question on Twitter for Leafs fans, and it can be answered by others. It's not like I can control the demographic. But which is your most hated or most disliked Canadian-based NHL team? And we only get 4 options on the poll. So I gave you the Habs, the Sens, the Oilers, and the Canucks. Because I think the Oilers fan base is more annoying than the Flames fan base. And I think the Jets are generally likable. The Canucks, Vancouverites have an obsession with hating us, so I figured I had to throw them into one of the four poll spots. And then, of course, the Habs are obvious, the Leafs' longest and oldest rival, and the Sens are obvious because of the provincial rivalry and the fact that we knocked them out of the playoffs 4 out of 5 years in the early 2000s. And yes, I just said we, and I know I don't care. So those are your options. Vote in the poll, and we'll see where it comes up. I think this would be, I think this would end civility in our country in a good way. The hatred, Ziggy. It wouldn't be a Tuesday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. It would be a Tuesday night against the Vancouver Canucks. It wouldn't be a Thursday night against the Florida Panthers. It would be a Thursday night against the Calgary Flames and then a Saturday night game against the Oilers. You'd have to go west multiple times a year. You'd be playing in different time zones. If this actually happens, I think it'd be... I think it would be great for our country in a really weird time. And some of those rivalries that get lost, because the Leafs haven't played the Habs in the playoffs since the year I was born. Like 2 months before I was born, 1979, Leafs and Habs. Leafs haven't played the Senators in the playoffs for more than 16 years now. The Leafs never play the Canucks. Well, they did in 94, but now that they're in opposite conferences, they don't play the Canucks in the playoffs. Oilers, Flames. Jets. I think it would be, I think it'd be unbelievable.
A Canadian division would be hard on the Leafs, I think. Like, if there was just a Canadian division where they played every other Canadian city 5-6 times.
Hard like, on the Leafs, why? For travel?
It would be hard on travel going out west all the time, and it would be which games are they like? Which games are slam dunks for the Leafs?
None. But which
Ottawa? Which, well, Ottawa. Ottawa would be slam dunks this year. The Habs.
Ottawa
got better.
Always plays up to the Leafs, though. They've taken some games from the Leafs that are annoying.
They do, but they've really like this is going to be a rebuild year for the Sens. It's going to depend what Murray does in net, because if you have a solid goaltender, anything's possible, but Ottawa is beatable. Every other team, who's easy right now? Like maybe Vancouver, but they still have got some work to do, right? I think they're going to feel their losses next year. As of right now, I think Jim Benning's going to figure out a way to make some deals. I don't know how or, you know, with his cap space, how's that going to happen? But Calgary...
good team.
Markstrom and net. They figure out what's going on with Goudreau. That's going to definitely change them. Winnipeg Jets. You got the best goaltender, one of the top three goaltenders in the NHL. Edmonton, Draisaitl, McDavid. I'm telling you right now, it wouldn't be easy. I think it would be tougher on the Leafs if there is a Canadian division.
Yeah, but here's why I like it. Number one, just the angst. Just the angst among all the fan bases, because you can't, like, we don't live out in Vancouver, but I would imagine that they've got some pretty strong rivalries with Edmonton and Calgary, and those play out on the airwaves and among the fan bases on social media out there. But you're not necessarily directly competing with those teams for playoff spots each and every year. If all seven Canadian teams are life and death against one another to make the playoffs, the angst is never going to go away. The intensity that the fan bases feel, at the very least, for all of these games is going to be something. And for a fan base here in Toronto that is expecting its team to take the next step, there will be pride. There will be pride on the line for these players. You know, guys are mercenaries, right? They're paid. That's everybody's an independent contractor, right? But you're going to be playing for that logo and that and your fan base, because you're going to hear it constantly if you go into a slump against the Western Canadian teams, or if you're outside of a playoff spot. I think civility ends. I think angst goes up and through the roof. We can ignore Tampa Bay. We don't yell at the Lightning fan base. We can ignore the Florida Panthers fan base. Everybody cares about hockey in this country. I think it would be wonderful.
It would definitely create more interest, right? The NHL is always trying to figure out ways. How can we make our game better, more fan-friendly? I think if you just have a Canadian division and everybody played each other 5-6 times, it would definitely create a spark for the fan base. And that's what it's all about, right? I think it would be great. I'm for it. I don't know what I like the idea.
Give it to me. In fact, I'm
like playing McDavid. Like, imagine going, getting McDavid 3 times a year, getting Vancouver 3. I'm talking about in Toronto.
Yeah. And then you go out there. And
oh yeah. I think it'd be great.
But the
travel's not a big deal, because you're going to go out there and you're going to play. It might even be like a 6-game road trip. You play back, you'd go and do like a Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, you know what I mean? Or you'd mix in a Winnipeg. You might go up there for maybe even 8 games.
Right. Do what they did back in the 80s, where the Oilers or the Jets would go down to LA and play the Kings on a Friday and a Sunday. You play 2 road games. Do the same thing. Do, as you just said, do the roadie where you start in one city and you circle all the way back and play maybe 5 or 6 games over the course of the entire.
The way they're going to have to like condense the schedule, it's going to be back. It'll be back to backs. Next year, they want to cut down on the spread and careful on how that all happens. Like, they don't want teams coming in and out of the cities all the time. You're going to get back to back games. And yeah, it's going to only be about, I don't think we're playing 82 games, but a lot of back-to-backs. They're going to go out for road trips. I like the idea. The fact that it got out, Gary Bettman's on the phone with him for sure today.
Probably saying, yesterday.
What are you doing?
Right.
What are you doing?
Well,
you want your team? Take it away.
We don't know whether there's any truth to this, but Bill Foley, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, was on a Las Vegas radio station yesterday and said repeatedly, not once, but repeatedly, that he expects that there will be a Canadian division when the NHL season resumes, and he thinks the season will resume in February. Now, we'll get thoughts on this from Anthony Stewart and David Amber, who's in for Justin Bourne today. Elliot Friedman will be our guest at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So we'll definitely be touching on the potential for a Canadian division with him. So I said Stewie and Amber, that's at 8:30. Tim Leeper for the full hour at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. Frank Pietrangelo, the cousin of Alex Pietrangelo and a Stanley Cup winning goaltender himself from the early 90s Pittsburgh Penguins. A lot to get to with Frank, taking us back in time. Can't wait for this. We also got to get a correct pronouncer on the name, because when he played, everybody called him Frank Pietrangelo, which I don't think was accurate. Frank Pietrangelo at 8 o'clock. Hugh Burl has just stepped into studio. We'll Burl the lead next. We got Tim Leeper for the full hour. And we'll get into the hitting cage experience today. Does Ziggy have a chance against 90 miles per hour? And it was 5 years ago yesterday that Jose Bautista flipped the bat on Sam Dyson and the Texas Rangers. Tim Leeper was in the first base coach's box for that experience, and we'll go over it with him. Great, great memory in this city.
By the way,
that would be kind of cool to be on the field for, no?
Absolutely.
Well, that presumes Leep was paying attention at the time.
By the way, Leeper just texted me, and I'm going to read you the full quote here. Send me video today. LOL. He has no chance. There you go.
Oh, my goodness. He sent me a text message saying, you got this. See, that's what a good coach does. He tries to build up the player.
You've
but
got this.
Behind his back, he is absolutely just searing.
How's that knife feel right between the shoulder blades, eh?
Oh, yeah, I already know. I've been a coach for 2 years. I do the same thing to my players. No, I'm kidding, guys. I'm kidding.
But I'm not kidding, really.
Yeah. I won't see it until January, so you'll forget about it by then anyway. Voted
that Scott MacArthur did on that breakup? Man, is he terrible.
Oh, God. Yeah, let me guess. The puck didn't end up out of the zone. It was turned over. You can vote in our troll poll as well. Bill Foley, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, suggesting there might be a Canadian division next NHL season. Which Canadian team do you dislike the most? Habs, Sens, Canucks, or Oilers? I didn't put Flames or Jets because we only got four, not six. And I think the Flames and Jets are pretty benign.
Yeah.
But you can write in if you...
It's hard to hate on the Jets.
Right.
Yeah.
What's leading right now?
Well,
oh, the Habs. Sorry, I just looked.
Oh, 53%.
Next question.
53%.
That's disturbing. Disturbing. That's what it is.
Burl the lead.
All right,
you.
Gentlemen, here we go. Let's talk some baseball. Not a bad first inning for the Dodgers last night against the Braves in Game 3 of the NLCS, huh?
Here's one well hit into center. That ball is down. Base hit for Smith. It's 2-0, and Smith is in the second with a double. Here's a shot into left center field, back at the wall, it's gone! What a start for the Dodgers! All of this starting on that close play at first. Here is a shot to center by Rios, back at the wall, that is gone!
Seager bangs one to center field, that's going to drop in for a base hit. Taylor comes in to score, and Betts slides in safely at third. The Dodgers lead it 7-0.
The bases are loaded, and the batter is Max Muncy with two out here in the first inning.
Here's a fly ball into right center field, back at the wall, it is gone! Grand slam, and the first inning is historic.
Now you add all of that up, the Dodgers score a major league postseason record 11 runs in the inning. It's the most runs ever scored in any inning in the baseball playoffs. Not surprisingly, the Dodgers won the game. They hung on to win it 15-3. So they're back, right? This is the Dodgers team we expected to see.
And that is a bad flashback for Atlanta. Do you remember last year in the division series against St. Louis, the fifth and deciding game, Atlanta, it might have been 9 or 10 runs.
Yeah,
it was ugly.
Yeah.
First inning.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't even hit yet and the game's over.
Go get them, boys.
Are the Dodgers back in the series? They were never out of the series because they're so good and they have such depth in their starting rotation. Like, Clayton Kershaw is pitching tonight, we believe.
Maybe.
We believe,
yeah,
off of the back situation that he has.
But playoff Clayton Kershaw isn't as scary as regular season Clayton Kershaw.
Well, except the one that threw in the wild card play-in series against Milwaukee was great. I do say, though, it'll come down, like, if Bryce Wilson has a good game for Atlanta tonight, that can turn the tide. You're as good as your next day's starting pitcher.
Yeah. The Braves still lead the NLCS 2-1. Game 4 goes tonight, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, over in the ALCS, Jose Altuve and George Springer each belted home runs to lead the Astros to a 4-3 win over the Rays. Tampa can still book a ticket to the World Series with a win tonight in Game 5, 5 o'clock on Sportsnet. A couple of Blue Jays pitchers were on Good Show yesterday. Matt Shoemaker says he knew a couple of days before that he would be making the Game 1 start against the Rays in the wild card series, but he didn't know how long he'd be left in there, and he says that's a good thing.
In the moment, I do not think I would have wanted to know, because, like I said, I wouldn't want my focus to shift, strictly because I don't want my mental state to shift to, oh, man, I only got two more batters. Or, oh, man, I only got to go, you know, through the third inning, so I got to do this, and this up to that point. I just like going out there and just focusing on one pitch at a time.
I guess there's some wisdom to that. Just go in there. You don't know how long you're going to be in there, so just get in there and give it everything you have. Shoemaker was given the hook after just 3 innings and 35 pitches.
See, Dusty Baker stayed with Zach Greinke in the 6th inning.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, after Randy Arozarena had hit a home run off of Greinke in the 4th inning, his previous at bat, And Greinke's post-game comments were, well, geez, since I've gotten here, I don't think they've had much confidence in me. So it was nice to have a manager give me that shot. I mean, he's a starting pitcher.
Sometimes you just got to let the guys work their way out of it, right?
Dusty Baker went on feel. Zach Greinke's a Cy Young Award winner, the $200 million man. We're going to go with him. I know it's not the same situation as Shoemaker, but sometimes you got to let the humans do human things.
It's interesting you say that because Nate Pearson also made an appearance on Good Show. The boys asked him about the team's plans for him next season, and he talked a little bit about analytics off the top.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're calculating it, running the numbers analytically or whatever. You know, I'm sure the Jays will have some sort of plan in place for me. But as far as that goes, I mean, I think they may just start letting me just get innings, man, because that's the main thing that matters now. It's not really an innings limit. It's kind of just letting me get as many innings as I can. And so I think they'll probably just let me go from the start, see where we're at, you know, halfway through the season or three-fourths through the season, and then make a call from there.
I don't think they're going to let him go from the start. I think the opposite, actually. I think they're going to keep very close tabs on him. What do you think?
They got to be very careful because Nate Pearson threw 100 innings in professional baseball for the first time in 2019, because in 2018 he had a run of injuries. And then obviously what happened this year, just 18 innings of work or so because of the pandemic, and then he wasn't healthy for the entirety of the 60 games, et cetera, et cetera. This is your prized possession. There may be frustration at times next year with his usage, but the Blue Jays are playing the long game with this one.
As they should. Boys, let's move to the ice now. A couple of NHL owners were saying some interesting things yesterday. One made sense, sort of. The other was ludicrous. Let's start with the ludicrous. Sens owner Eugene Melnyk telling the Financial Post that he thinks the Senators, the Ottawa Senators of the NHL, will win the Stanley Cup within 4 years. Melnyk saying, this is a quote, "I truly believe that we are a Stanley Cup winner within 4 years. It can happen anytime, but within 4 years." Ziggy.
4 years?
That's what he said.
Hey, I love what they did. I love who they've added. Matt Murray and Nett, that gives them some stability because you don't really know what you have if you have goals going in that shouldn't go in. They have a boatload of draft picks from this year. 4 years might be a little quick. I mean, you get in, you don't know. I've said this more than once. You get in, you don't know. I think 4 years would be a good let's make a run comment. I think 3 years getting into the playoffs would be a good goal to have, but 4 years to call you to win it. I love having some confidence in your guys, but hey, the pressure's on now.
Mike Babcock got fired 4 years and a month and a bit into his tenure in Toronto because this team did not achieve what people expected it to achieve. Now, Eugene Melnyk, it's Eugene Melnyk saying it. That's why we're reacting the way that we are. But 4 years from now, a lot can change. Yeah. He's said stupider and crazier things than that.
Hey, who knows? Hey, wish them the best
of luck. It's not stupid and not crazy, but he's said a lot. Yeah. He's said a lot stupider and crazy.
Yeah. Meantime.
Yeah, but you got to remember, though, does he actually believe they're going to win the Stanley Cup in 4 years? I mean, probably not. What this does is it sets the wheels in motion, right? This says from your owner, hey, I want to be aggressive. I want to win. I mean, he's going to have to back it up with spending money and treating the guys well. But, hey, I want to have a winning team in 4 years. This is planting the seed in the guys that have come in. It's planting the seed in the prospects, in the draft picks, and it's not such a bad play as everyone's saying. This is, you know, it's not a terrible play, but the pressure's on now.
And Melnick in that very same conversation also said that he's got a plan to get 6,000 people into the arena and appropriately distanced for games perhaps as early as February, to which I know you thought, well, they've been drawing 6,000 a game the last 4 years.
So at capacity for them then. Oh, sorry. Meantime, in Las Vegas, Golden Knights owner Bill Foley may have let the cat out of the bag when he was asked about next season and the border.
Well, who knows who's going to be playing? If you're not playing for the fans, I don't know how a lot of teams can make it, including us. It's going to be very difficult. You've got to put a make a serious financial commitment to fund the team if we're not playing in front of fans. I believe Gary Bettman is not going to be having us fly all around and play in empty arenas. There's going to be another plan, and we'll see. And he's talking about January 1st. I don't know. Maybe February 1st. Maybe an abbreviated season and an accelerated season. I don't think that border is going to be open before January 1st, if it's open January 1st. I think they're going to play a Canadian division. I don't think they're going to be crossing the border.
I kind of like the idea of a Canadian division.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
In fact, now that I've heard it, I'll be sad and mad if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, we want it now. Bring on the Canadian teams. Yeah, I think it'd be great.
But you guys, from that,
I don't know. Like, that just seems like he's more just that's his own thinking. Like,
just freestyle.
I don't think the NHL was behind that. I don't know. It didn't sound very confident. I've had talks with other board members and league owners, and that's what we're gonna do. That seemed like, hey, this could be a possibility for us to start the season earlier. That's what that audio sounded like.
Again, it could be. I wonder if it's being talked about though, and Gary Bettman would not want one of his owners. Like, the messaging is always very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Say this, and here's a bunch of stuff you don't say.
Yes, and proclamations like this usually come from Gary Bettman himself, not from a team owner. And, of course, you guys have been talking about this all morning. We'll continue to talk about this for a while. Today is Ziggy at the Bat Day. Can Mike Zigomanis hit a 90-mile-per-hour fastball? We're going to find that out later today. He has his supporters, and he has his detractors.
Do you remember what you said to me when I told you that Ziggy was going to try to hit 90 miles an hour in a batting cage on Thursday?
Not a chance.
That's what I said.
I'll tell you what. Within three pitches, he's made solid contact. Three pitches. Freaking athlete.
Oh, Kevin Barker.
He's a freaking athlete.
Jeff Blair with diametrically opposed opinions here.
Yes.
To say the least.
I just don't like when the major league players swing at 87 and miss. That just doesn't instill confidence in me.
Yeah, but Ziggy,
last night watching those games, and like, I'm watching 87, then like 90, and they're swinging and missing. I'm like, this isn't good. These guys have been hitting baseballs their whole life. I have not hit a baseball. I think I went to a batting cage 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, one of my first pro years, we all went to the batting cages.
You know, when he started, he started talking about this, it was 2 years ago he was at a batting cage. Yep. Now we moved it back to 20 years.
Yep.
I'm telling you, I don't think I've been in a batting cage. Like, I don't think I've actually gone in and hit serious pitches out of a batting cage in 20 years.
Yeah. Same here. I can't remember the last time
I was in Grand Bend.
I'm not talking lob balls. I'm not talking, they have the batting cage where they lob you a softball.
Yeah.
Not those ones. I mean some heat.
Heat.
You're going to see a lot of it today, my friend.
You know what? None of us will be tucked when we're there either. Nobody's doing any tucks today.
Nope.
416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. Apparently, it's $500. We're on a four-game losing streak, four-day losing streak here. It's apparently $500.
It's five bills today.
It's $500 in Untuckit gift cards up for grabs. We'll play all or nothing, three true or false questions. Get them all right, get them all wrong. You want to be the contestant? Dial now. We play next. $500 in Untuckit gift cards up for grabs. So a huge haul. All or nothing. Three true or false questions. Get them all right or get them all wrong. And you're the winner. No in between. Aiden in Innisfil is our contestant this morning. Good morning, Aiden.
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing really well. Good luck to you. Ziggy's got question number one.
Our very own Anthony Stewart will be joining us at 8:30 a.m. today. He was taken 25th overall in the 2003 draft by the Florida Panthers. True or false?
False.
It was true. It was drafted 25th overall. First round. Must be nice, huh?
We should see if we can get a drop from Aiden. Where'd you think he was taken? 10th yeah, round, 11th round.
What round do you think? What did you have him at? Is he there?
All right, we'll move on. Oh. Question number two. Aiden, you want to get the next two intentionally wrong.
Aiden, Tim Leeper will join us at 7 o'clock or shortly thereafter. He, of course, was a former member of the Blue Jays coaching staff. In fact, Tim Leeper was their pitching coach. True or false? Get it wrong. Okay, we've lost Aiden, apparently. Those questions were way too...
Did the phone right. drop?
I was like, that was the quietest line drop ever. I don't know, it's early. I'm surprised no one's fallen asleep yet. Like, on the phone with
All
us.
Right.
Like,
well, they haven't fallen asleep yet. They're about to.
You know what? We're out of time.
600 bones!
Does that count as a... Really?
That's a loss. The number carries over tomorrow.
Sure.
We got
if
six.
Your line drops, that's a loss.
It is now. We're making the executive decision.
Well, he can call back in if he wants. I mean,
oh, but he
it didn't start to garble on him. So if he wants to call back in, we can play the game in 20 minutes. I guess.
Sure.
But if not,
we're really making this
the
up
amount
as we go along.
Carries over.
We have no idea.
The amount carries over to tomorrow.
We've never had a drop.
We've never had a drop.
You gotta call. If you're going for 500, you got a call from a landline. I'm sorry. That's landline territory.
Sounds to me like you got the first one wrong and then just thought he was done, so he hung up.
That's like I'm pulling over and I'm using a payphone.
Yeah. Well, it could also be maybe he didn't know the rules. He got the first one wrong and hung
up. Yeah,
that
can happen too.
You're allowed to get the first one wrong. Call back. Aiden and Innisfil at some point. We'll try to get you back on. Frank Pietrangelo, Alex's cousin, former Pittsburgh Penguins goalie from about 30 years ago at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Justin Bohr not with us today, so it'll be Anthony Stewart and David Amber. And Tim Leeper for the full hour will relive the seventh inning of Game 5 of the 2015 Division Series, the bat flip inning. And does Leep think Ziggy can hit a 90-mile-per-hour fastball off a pitching machine when he steps in against that pitching machine in about 3.5 hours. Leap next. So we're all geeked up for the possibility of an all-Canadian NHL division this year, thanks to Bill Foley, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights. Hugh talked about that in his top-of-the-hour update. The lead-off Thursday troll poll on Twitter, at Scotty Mac, thanks at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burl, at Fan590. Which Canadian-based NHL team do you dislike the most? Only four options, because there are only four spots for the poll. So we put the Habs, the Sens, the Canucks, and the Oilers right in for the Flames or Jets. I think they're the two most likable non-Toronto teams. Because the Sens and the Habs, the traditional rivals, the Canucks, they hate Toronto, the Vancouverites, and the Oilers, well, their fan base is a little sensitive as well, to say the least. That's me being pretty diplomatic about it. Ziggy will attempt to hit a 90-mile-per-hour fastball off of a pitching machine in about 3.5 hours up at a batting cage in the city above Toronto, the city of Vaughan. We've gotten a lot of texts. Some people, Ziggy, know the jingle. Some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
There are two camps. It's not a universal understanding that the city above Toronto, the city of Vaughan, it's a great jingle. I used to hear it all the time on this radio station.
Never heard it till today.
And Tim Leeper is with us for the hour. And yesterday was the five-year anniversary of the Jose Bautista bat flip, the craziest inning in baseball history, in my opinion. We'll relive that. But what do you got, like Mr. Dress-Up's tickle trunk at home or something? You're pulling Zygomantis bobbleheads in Marley's jerseys. Where the hell did you get that?
I had a lot of time on my hands this morning to search around. Did you see the? I just tweeted one, or not tweeted, but I actually just sent you one of him throwing the first pitch out, too.
I've sent both out. Now, you retired from Twitter, so I have to now be your go-between and get this out onto social media.
But I can't be reached at Mike Zygomantis, so you can't get me there.
You blame me.
You have any problems,
Ziggy,
with what I say?
You blame me for getting all that reaction to your Twitter account. It's Leeper. It's Leeper who's driving all that traffic to your Twitter account.
I can't believe you posted this. I can't believe it. It's one thing to text it to someone. You don't post this.
I asked Leeper if he wanted it posted, and he said yes.
And listen, I got to tell you.
I'm just here to serve the masters, you know? I'm here to please people.
I initially thought Ziggy wouldn't be able to do this today, but I talked yesterday with Eugene Melnyk, and he said that Ziggy definitely can. So I feel a little bit better about his chances today.
Well,
as long as Eugene said it, it must be.
It has to be true.
It'll probably happen. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. That, I mean, the first pitch is a little different. Guys, I've had two right shoulder operations. Throwing a baseball and trying to swing a bat are not at the top of the lists on activities you can resume. My surgeon said there is a good chance you'll never lift your hand above your head again. I went and had to throw the first pitch to prove him wrong. It wasn't pretty, but it happened. And if I actually hit this ball and make contact, wow.
Look at where you are in your life, though. You're doing... So you used to be an NHL hockey player. Like, you were a top-of-the-line athlete. Mm-hmm. And now you have to consult with your surgeon before throwing out a ceremonial first pitch, and you have to speak to your doctors before you stand in against a pitching machine.
Yeah.
How far the mighty fall in such a short period of time.
And that doesn't even include my left arm. That's not good right now. I got a bad left elbow and bad left shoulder.
Yeah, he's got a bad wing leap. He's got a bad... Yeah,
my left side is not good. So I'm more concerned about that than my right side with the shoulder surgeries.
You're catching up to me, Zig. I'll tell you what, professional sports gets you ready for absolutely nothing for the rest of your life except rehab.
No, it doesn't. No, I feel for, like, I'm getting up in the morning and I'm sore some days, and I didn't do anything. Like, I mowed the lawn the day before, and I'm like, I'm sore the next day, which has never happened.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm nervous about tomorrow, how I'm going to feel, because I'm going to take my hacks.
It's the oblique. It's the core muscles that are going to... It's not going to be good.
Adam Duvall coming. You got an Adam Duvall coming.
Oh, I'm getting Duvall'd for sure.
You're getting Duvall'd.
That's the first thing I could think of. When I saw him grab his left back, I'm like, yep, there's a professional baseball player that got injured swinging a bat. What's going to happen to me?
Hey, Leap, how much crap did Kevin Pillar take after he sneezed in spring training and blew his oblique and was gone for like 2 or 3 weeks? Do you remember that? And then he came back with the T-shirt, asked me about my sneeze.
He did, but I don't even think we knew he was gone. I don't even think we knew he was gone. I do remember that. But if you, with Pillar, especially with stuff that's gone on lately, when he does something like that, it's like not a big surprise to you.
Come on.
And everybody takes 3 weeks off of spring training at one point.
Superman sneezed and was gone for 3 weeks and you didn't even notice. And you're the outfield coach.
Yeah, we made some giant nose comments. It just gave me a chance to work with other guys, which was a lot more fun.
Oh, my God.
Didn't know he was gone. Where did you think he went?
I tell you what, thank God he was out there for pretty much every day of my major league coaching career, because he saved me a lot.
He covered your ass, eh? He covered your ass.
Yes, he did.
So this is the question that I don't think is going to be answered later on today, because I am not in Jeff Blair's camp. I don't think Ziggy has a chance, and I'm more with Kevin Barker, and you've been doing, I understand you've been doing back channeling work, Leap, where you're patting Ziggy on the back. You got this, you got this, you got this. And then you're texting everybody else saying Ziggy doesn't have a chance. So you're the perfect, you should go into politics, really. I mean, an ex-athlete, you say it only sets you up for rehab. You should go into politics the way that you're able to talk out of both sides of your mouth and kind of work the back channels here. So how do you hit, like a total layperson, me, Ziggy, who? How do you even begin to create the possibility of making contact with a 90-mile-per-hour pitch?
Well, first of all, is it an arm machine or is it going to be the machine that someone feeds the balls into?
There's two different kinds of machines. Wait a second.
I've never faced an arm machine. I actually just envision the two tires spinning where you feed the ball into it and it spits it out.
Okay, no, well, that's scarier. Like, it's a little scary.
That's the ball's scarier. A little bit messed up.
You got to watch that ball running in on you, Zig. It's going to come in on you hard.
Here we go.
I want the arm machine. Wait a second now. This is not what I signed up for.
You had no idea there was anything like an arm machine. You had no idea. You're not getting away with that one. You're not getting away with that one. He's trying to change the terms of the bet.
The arm machine. Now, so all of a sudden, we're changing machines. This feels like a setup. This feels like a setup, Leap.
Boy,
what do you think?
The backtracking here is unbelievable.
Well, Leap, I'm just about to text you to your phone because I tweeted it yesterday that this is what I think Zigamanis should have to do because he's got to grow the handlebar Fu Manchu, Pete Walker style, Sam Cosentino style mustache if he loses. That's the bet. But I saw the circle beard. I saw the circle beard on the internets the other day, and I thought, well, we could change the bet. He's not gonna step up and pull that act. But
for real though, the one you feed in, they come in close, right? Leap?
Like they can
get you inside.
You may want to check the baseballs before because if there's a little stitch off a little bit, it'll come run in, probably go right in the rib cage. But I wouldn't worry about that.
You're so full
honestly,
of crap.
Honestly, because that's, I'm all kidding aside, guys, I'm worried about one that comes in. Like that's a 90's going to, okay, a 90's going to hurt.
But we're standing in there too. You're the one involved in the bet, but I'm going to take some hacks. I think Vic will.
You go in first. I want you to go in first just to make sure the machine's working.
All right, I'll do that. I'm fine.
Okay,
I'm not scared.
The advice you got for starting at 90 right away—that's really good advice. You got 10 shot. You got 10 chances to put a ball fair. Is this what we're doing today?
No. We haven't decided on how many balls.
He's got to push a ball forward. So I don't care if it's a foul ball. Like if he turns on it, Leap, and pulls it foul, I'm okay with that. But the ball needs to go forward.
Farther than the fact of his thumbs, then his thumbs are going to fall off when he makes contact. So the ball has to go farther than his thumbs.
Okay. Well, he's in for hand surgery in a couple of weeks. So
I actually have hand surgery in exactly 2 weeks. So
is this for this your hand?
This should be fine. This should be good.
Here's the thing. If he's going in for hand surgery on the pinky finger, he may as well get the thumb done while he's there. I mean, kill two birds with one stone.
You can actually probably add a finger and be Antonio Alfonseca and maybe throw a nasty changeup with that.
Former Cubby with six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot.
Guys, I got something to ask you.
Oh, here God. We go. Drum roll, please.
Imagine I hit a bunch at 90 and like it goes online. And somebody from the Jays reaches out. Like, wouldn't that be a story?
What if Ross Atkins offered you seven figures?
Not seven. I'll play for the minimum. Okay, but just imagine somebody reaches out and says, hey, this is not bad.
I think this is a real possibility.
I think it could.
Leap, what are the chances of that?
So what you're saying is I have a chance.
Yeah, yeah. Like Dumb and Dumber, one in a million. So you're saying there's a chance.
Imagine I just get up and start hitting, like,
I mean, Siggy, like,
do you say dingers?
Let's be honest. It wouldn't take much for you to replicate Randall Grichuk's on base percentage. So if you make contact with a couple of 90-mile-an-hour fastballs today, I think he could get on base 28% of the time next season. Why not?
Honestly, that was from the group chat. Somebody just messaged in and said, hey, imagine you hit a couple and the Jays want to give you a tryout. Huh?
Yeah, you'd be welcome at fantasy camp. You and George Costanza at fantasy camp. So do you have any honest advice, Leap? Or just, yes. Is it just stand there and pray?
No, honestly, you're a hockey guy. And I remember when I coached in Ottawa my first year, it was 99. So these guys, we used to have, I don't know if you probably played against guys, Justin Davis, Boynton, you probably played with in Arizona. And Mark Bell used to come out and take batting practice with us.
Oh, yeah.
The old 67s. So,
yeah, all those guys.
When you got to open up, like your slap shot, you got to open up. You got to have the hips open. So don't try to like look like a baseball player with like a closed stance. Sit on the plate, do a little Tony Bautista stance, and then just hey, make sure the ball is low because you first of all, you can't raise your arms above your head, and you're actually a medical miracle out there trying to hit these balls right now. But look, try to get something low and open up the hips and try to recreate your slap shot as much as you possibly can.
I just know tuck the right elbow in, right elbow in, and get that right shoulder through the ball, right.
No, just try to hit it. Get that bat on plane and just try to swing hard because you might hit it.
Just close your eyes.
I just got a text that says, this guy has 30 injuries going on right now.
So, oh, yeah.
That's my group chat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to. Yeah.
I got my own group chat, Ziggy.
I can only imagine who's in your group chat. You and Josh. Were you pitching Tanner Roark in an elimination game for the Blue Jays? Was that the was that the thread?
That was exactly what we were going to do.
So
or Julian Merriweather.
You know, I think we want to devote enough time to the 5-year anniversary, which was yesterday, of Game 5 against Texas and reliving that crazy 7th inning. And I love the stories you tell about that. And of course, you were in the first base coach's box, standing there with your stopwatch as Jose Bautista. I love the stopwatch stuff.
Such, so glamorous.
It's just the dream. As he hit the home run.
What do you mean?
Well, Leaper always said, the first base coaches always have a stopwatch because they got to time the pitcher's move to first base. Right?
Time the move?
Yeah. You know, when you get a runner on first base and an attempted pickoff or the pitcher's thrown to the plate, how long does it take for him to get through his delivery and deliver the pitch to the catcher? And then that helps.
You have a stopwatch to do that?
Yeah, that helps inform whether you could potentially steal a base off of that pitcher. Well, Leap, you can explain it. You did it.
Wow. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, so when the pitcher makes his first move, you go ahead and start the stopwatch, and then when the catcher catches the ball, you stop the stopwatch, and that would be the pitcher's time to home plate. And if the time it takes him to get the ball to the catcher and then the catcher to get the ball to the second base, which is usually around, you know, 5 seconds, and if you can run faster than that, then you have a stolen base. So it's important that you have the times on that.
What's a slow time and what's a fast time?
Fast times are like 1.3 and below. And then once you start getting above like 1.35 and definitely into the 1.4s, if you have a guy that can run decent, then they can steal second.
Who had the best time on your stopwatch at any point? Who was the toughest to run on?
There was the guys that slide stepped were hard. I don't remember who was really hard. I mean, guys would mix it up. Guys that mix up their deliveries, they're really hard. Guys that alter things. I'm just trying to think of a guy that slide steps a lot. But I have to.
Is there someone on the flip side who was just, if you had anybody with speed on first base, Leap, it was just green light to go because the pitcher was so slow to the plate.
Like Anibal Sanchez, Tamon Walker was really slow. We won a game in Seattle just because we just stole a bunch of bases off him. Those guys kind of stuck out to you. Ubaldo Jimenez was a guy for sure. I mean, like when he came into the game in that wild card game, like, and Devin Travis got on to start the inning, it was like I can't wait for him to like steal a base, and then JD got a hit on the first pitch, so we didn't have to worry about that.
Right. Well, and Ubaldo Jimenez gave up the bomb to Edwin. God, that would be the 4-year anniversary of that would have just passed. in the last week or so. You and I were texting a little bit about this the other day, and we'll tee up the Bautista bat flip seventh inning segment by saying this. It feels like a different lifetime ago, doesn't it? It's only 5 years ago, but it feels like a lifetime ago.
It does. And they were such good times. I mean, I was driving around and I was listening to Tim and Sid yesterday, and they played it during their show. And I just, it was so loud in there and it was so great. And then just the memory of it, like, yeah, it did seem like a lifetime ago. It really did. It was, and you know, and it's really cool to be a part of something that meant so much to like the sports in the city and sports in this country. And it was a really, really cool moment.
All right. Go ahead.
What did you say to him on the way by?
Oh, I didn't. I've said this before because I put myself down the line just to watch him because I wasn't really needed to help anybody during that situation. And I was really focused on him. So when he hit it, I wasn't watching Dyson throw the ball. I was just really focused on Jose. And when he hit it, I started literally to say, "You got to run." And then before the word run got out of my mouth, I'm like, forget that, man. This is like the best moment ever. Like, take as long as you want. So I almost said that. And it was a cool moment. Like, I just thought, for me, just to have a good seat for something that I realized was so big at the time, I was just kind of happy to be there.
And think of all the bat flips since and the constipation that bat flip caused Sam Dyson and the Texas Rangers. When you think about what Tatis does now or Tim Anderson does with the Chicago White Sox, it's like Jose ended up opening the floodgates for all the bat flippers out there. And he's the one who took all the crap for a natural emotional response to what undoubtedly was the biggest home run he had hit in his life to that point.
Yeah. That was pretty unbelievable. You know, he had one that was not as significant, obviously, but it was better. But Darren O'Day threw a ball behind him one game at home, and he stood in there in the next pitch and hit one deep, which was like one of the greatest athletic feats that I've ever seen in my life. And Ziggy, you might face this today. If like one ball in the cage goes behind you, you just got to stick in there and hit the next one.
Yeah, you stare down those two tires spitting out that ball, Ziggy, and you let them know who's there.
Yeah.
Make sure you check the tread on the tires, too.
it's crazy when you think about how mad players got because of that bat flip.
They were mad because they got their ass kicked.
Yeah, but they were that, but they were mad about the bat flip. It's such an emotional moment. Believe me, I'll be the first one, Scotty, to call out guys. I think something's a little bit overboard or you're showboating. I just think in that moment, if I'm on the other team, I wouldn't get mad. I wouldn't get mad at that. That just, it wouldn't bother me. I don't care that high school baseball. I wouldn't get mad.
Yeah, you'd be pissed off in the moment, though. Sam Dyson just watched his season go to hell in a handbasket right there. I think that's
fine. You know, you got to sometimes you take a loss. Guy outplays you, he beats you, fine. I can deal with that. I can deal with a guy trying to celebrate, but if it was not overboard showboating. I didn't see it that way. And I remember tweeting about it at the time, like, I don't see the big deal. This is a big moment for a player. On your home field, it's just like you gotta deal. Let's just let it go.
Well,
I couldn't believe that carried over into next season. Like, that was the craziest part.
Well, that was it. And it was also it was the culmination of one of the craziest innings, I think, in baseball history. And it was the better part of an hour, that seventh inning. We'll go back through that seventh inning, including the strange run that Texas scored in the top of the seventh to break what at the time was a 2-2 tie. Did Leap even know what had happened when Russell Martin's throw back to Aaron Sanchez hit off of the end of Shinsu Chu's bat and skittered away, which allowed Rougned Odor to come down the third baseline and score the 3-2 run. I don't think a lot of people in the building knew what was going on because in between pitches, you're usually reaching down to take a drink of beer, talk to your buddy. All of a sudden, you look up, it's 2-2, now it's 3-2 Texas. What happened there? What was the understanding immediately in the moment the Blue Jays dug out? And then, of course, everything that happened, Texas melting down defensively, the Jose Bautista bat flip. We take you through the seventh inning, 5 years and one day after it happened, with the man who was on the field, Tim Leaper, next.
Well, one for Thompson. The case for the try. Deep left field. No doubt about it.
for so long. And it's going to burn you.
Thank you, Harold Reynolds. Bob from Burlington texts into 590-590. MVP went to a few end of the regular season games in 2015. It was fun to hear that one area down the third baseline chanting that for Jose. I was so wound up about the 2015 run, had to go to my office to listen to the Fan 590 for what turned out to be the Bautista bat flip game. My wife couldn't take me yelling at the TV. Bob in Burlington. Yeah, great memories. Great memories. 5 years and one day ago, when Tim Leeper was in the first base coach's box when Jose Bautista flipped the bat and put the Blue Jays ahead in that fifth game for good, and Leep is with us to relive that. It was 2-2 heading to the top of the seventh inning. Marcus Stroman, who had started the game for the Blue Jays, was out of the game, and Aaron Sanchez came in. What do you remember thinking, feeling at that moment? 2-2, start of the seventh.
You know what? I thought we were in a good spot. And even when we were down 0-2 in the series, I thought we would win. And then, fast forwarding with Sanchez, and, you know, Sanchez had been great all year. So we had the right guy in there. Stroh gave a great start. And I kind of liked where we were, especially with our offense. The way it was. And then I'll lead you into it, was the play where Russ hit Chu's bat with the ball.
Yes. And so what had happened was Rougned Odor had led off with a single. Chris Jimenez, the catcher.
Yes.
He had sacrificed Odor to second with a bunt. Delino DeShields came up, grounded out. Odor advanced to third base. So there's two outs for Shin-Soo Chu. Odor is on third. And that's when, in the middle of that at bat, Russell Martin catches a Sanchez pitch. Chu had taken it. He rears back. He's done it a million times in his life to throw the ball back to the pitcher. And Chu had kind of left his bat vertically out and up over the strike zone. And Russ's throw hit the bat. The ball skitters away. And Odor charges down the third baseline and scores to take a 3-2 lead. Then there's mass confusion, Leap, right?
Total mass confusion. I'm sitting there on the top step. And we saw what happened. And when it happened, it's like, oh, no, they're going to score. And then Dale Scott blew the play dead. And it was like, I thought at that point we had kind of dodged a bullet. But on the bench, nobody knew what was happening. And when something like that's happening, you know, this is a great thing about baseball. You don't know the rules. You can be in this game your whole life and never see this play, except if you're Jeff Banister, who said he'd seen that play before.
Oh, probably. Millions of times.
That's another story.
Millions with Jeff Banister. Of course.
Of course he did. But when it happened, so Gibby went out there, and I don't think Gibby really knew. Gibby just went out. I don't know if he knew the rule at the time. But one of the greatest things about that, our bench was like pretty full because like Saunders was hurt. He was on the bench. Price wasn't throwing. And I was going up and down the bench going, hey, do you guys know the rule? Do you know what's going on and whatever? But our bench, end of our bench was just Brett Cecil. We're just screaming out at the field and just screaming. And then I remember James Hoy, I think was a third base umpire, came over to the bench and basically threw everybody who was on the end of the bench out of the ball game at that point. And the greatest line from that moment, because we were all a little bit sick. Everybody had like a little bit of virus, and Price was really sick. He goes, you know what? I don't care. I'm sick anyway. And he just walked out. He walked into the clubhouse, and that brought a laugh to James Hoy's face too.
Why is that? Why are you allowed to score on a play like that? So you're telling me a guy in the batter's box can step in front of a catcher on purpose. The ball hits him. And somebody can score, and it's not a dead play.
Well, at that point, he didn't do it on purpose. Like he was just taking his normal, like he was just doing his normal routine, being in the box. If he had done it on purpose, they could have ruled that, and they would have made the play dead, and Odor would have had to go back to third base. But the fact that he was just actually taking his place in the batter's box, and Russ just happened to throw it off his bat, and it was a live ball at the time, that was definitely the right call. If you do it on purpose, it's definitely dead. But in that situation, Chu definitely didn't do that on purpose.
Well, and the building was a tinderbox at that point, Leap. because you guys are down 3-2. And I'm sitting there in the press box. I'm sitting with a couple of colleagues, and we're talking our way through all of this, as I assume everybody was. The one piece of context I didn't have, and I had some friends in the stadium sitting in the seats that day, and it didn't actually occur to me in the moment, was they didn't know what had happened. Because in between pitches, you're taking a drink of beer, you're turning to your friend and resuming a conversation, or you're anticipating the next pitch. Like, you're not staring at the field necessarily. And so it isn't just that nobody really understood the rule. It's that a lot of the people in the stadium, the crowd that day, didn't actually see what had happened. So, you know, the emotions are high. You don't know what's going on. Are they screwing us? That was, I think, one of the tracks of thought that some people in the stadium had. And that, combined with the intensity of the elimination game, really sort of created that tinderbox feel that we all felt.
Yes, Sid mentioned that yesterday on the show. It's like it, being a Blue Jays fan or a Canadian sports fan in general, you just don't expect things to go right. And you can totally attest to this. That was probably one of those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, this is where it's all unraveling. This is where us as Canadian sports fans, we get our due right here.
Well, and it was also, you'd been down 0-2, you'd gone to Texas and recouped a couple of games and come home for the decider. And well, maybe their luck had run out. You know, you coughed up the first couple of home games. It was all you could do to go down to Arlington and win a couple, and now you're back, and man, winning the three straight is tough. So you're down 3-2 to the bottom of the seventh. Cole Hamels, the starting pitcher, is still in the game for Texas. Russell Martin reaches on a ground ball to Elvis Andrus, and he boots it. Yeah. So that's error number one on Andrus. Kevin Pillar with Martin on first grounds to Mitch Moreland, whose throw to second base to get the runner, the lead runner trying to advance, Martin, is dropped by Andrus.
Well, it's also a couple of things on that play. Like, and I had the best visual for that play, and it's one of my most poignant moments in the major leagues. Yeah. When Moreland picked up the ball, I saw him take it out of his glove, and it was sitting in the tips of his fingers. And ooh, when he did that, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I knew something good was going to happen for us. At that same time, I looked up to see where Russ is, and Russ had actually just moved into the inside part of the baseline. It was a good base runner to, like, kind of yep, block the throwing lane from Moreland to Andrus. And if you actually look at the play, and I didn't even look at this till this spring when I was trying to do some stuff in my current job, that the ball actually went through Russ's legs. So, like, it wasn't an easy catch. I mean, he definitely lost sight of it. And whatever Russ was trying to do by trying to take away the throwing lane, he did it perfectly because the ball went through his legs.
Right, and the error on that play was charged to Mitch Moreland, the first baseman. So yes, not Andrus. But, yeah, I it's crazy what you notice, Leap, right? And you had the great vantage point. But the fact that moment in time where you saw Moreland with the ball on his fingertips sits still for you. Like, that's right. That's not anything else that the rest of us would have seen. So now you guys have first and second, nobody out. At that point, Dalton Pompey, the speedster, pinch runs for Russell Martin as the tying run in scoring position at second base. Next up is Ryan Goins, who grounds to third.
Did he bunt?
Right? Okay, I'm reading baseball references play by play. So I need some clarification. He bunts.
Which was not an easy task right there.
All right, so describe that play, because everybody ended up safe and Elvis Andrus was charged with an error on that play. Oh, that was the play at third base.
Yes.
Yes, Beltre had
charged hard, and listen, you're bunting against 95 darting and dashing. And so he bunted it hard to Beltre, who did a great job, who turned and fired perfectly to Andrus. But again, Andrus peeked his head up, looking over at first base, looked to see where the runner was or whatever. And then I can also remember just the ball popping out of his glove right there. And then here we are with the bases loaded, which led us to a couple other great plays too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Ben Revere faces Cole Hamels, bases loaded, nobody out. He grounds out Mitch Moreland. So it's a 3-2 ground out to the first baseman out at home.
Now here's the thing on that play too. If you remember, Pomp slid right into Jimenez and took him out hard.
The catcher, like, Jimenez, like, yeah,
floored him. So Bannister went out to go check that, and obviously the stadium was already a tinderbox. Dan Bellino was a first base umpire, and he comes over to me and Ben standing at first base, and he goes, listen, there's a decent chance here that Pompey went out of the sliding lane, and there could be a double play on this. I'm just warning you guys. Ooh. You guys realize if this happens that everything in this stadium that's not bolted down will probably end up on the field. So I suggest that you guys go out to the middle of the field, go out to second base. And so
is that what they did?
This is Dan Bellino who said this to me, and I started laughing.
Okay.
And then he goes, I just want to give you one more piece of advice. I'm going to be standing right next to you. So be really, really careful. And I thought in the moment with everything that was going on, that was like the greatest umpire quote of all time.
Oh my God. Yeah. These are the little things, right? These conversations and these heated moments. So it's still 3-2, bases loaded, one out. A ground ball, Texas could turn it and end the inning, right? And everybody's left stranded and you don't score. Josh Donaldson is up. At this point, Sam Dyson replaces Cole Hamels.
Who was awesome that day.
Who was awesome that day. So Hamels is the lefty. Dyson is the hard-throwing right-handed reliever who had been in the Blue Jays system. I believe John Farrell was once quoted as saying Sam Dyson had the best arm in the organization way, way, way back. Of course, before Farrell left for his dream job. So Josh Donaldson hits a shallow fly ball over the second baseman's head, and it is misplayed, right?
His legs just locked up.
Yeah,
this is great. Rugnino Odor things, all the great things. Like he looked like he never even walked. He looked like a baby giraffe going after that pop up, and that was a huge moment. All he had to do was turn his shoulders and go catch the ball. It was a really, really shallow pop up. And in fact, Ben even got thrown out second base because he thought he was going to get doubled up. It was so shallow. He just didn't move on that ball whatsoever. That was such a break. And again, I think it was one of those heat of the moment things where Texas just like. They couldn't do anything right.
Yeah, so they'd made a bunch of errors that inning. That was not an error, but it was a misplay that allowed the tying run to score, force out at second, first and third, two outs, Jose Bautista at the plate, and the rest, as the kids say, leap is history.
Yes, and it was unbelievable. I mean, what a great moment. And again, being in the city now, that and Kawhi Leonard's shot against the 76ers obviously are like two really awesome moments. And being able to be a part of that was was incredible. And the sound in the stadium and just reliving it yesterday, because I haven't really watched it or heard a lot about it. So even reliving it yesterday was like a really cool thing. But the stadium was so loud and it was rocking. And all the camera shots with the cameras like shaking, which is such a cool byproduct of all the things that happened there. One other thing that was great about that, at the end of the inning, Dyson came up and put his hand, if you ever get a chance to watch this, he put his hand on Tulowitzki's back at home plate. If you watch Tulo's reaction to Dyson touch him, it's like, it was classic Tulo, but it was who we were as a team at the time. And that's one of the funniest moments. If you get a chance to go watch that, like that's priceless.
So I have a recollection of that, but why did he go and put his hand on Tulowitzki's back? Try to calm things down, or what was?
I don't know what he did. I have no idea. He was yelling at Edwin first because Edwin was trying to calm the crowd down, and
he mistook that. Yeah, he mistook that.
And Tulo being the ultra competitor, like you don't touch him during competition. Right. And when he touched him, it was great. And the other thing is, we emptied the benches, I think, a few times during that game too. And I can remember after Hamels came out, I think it was after the Tulowitzki thing. I remember standing next to Hamels. I looked up and I didn't really, it was an awkward moment. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? I go, what are you doing here? He goes, I'm just out here because Burley was at the end of the bench too. He goes, I'm just out here to see what Burley has to say. He's emptied the benches three times today because Burles was chirping the whole game. It was absolutely hilarious.
Oh man. And Cole Hamels is kind of a chill surfer dude, right? Great pitcher, but kind of a chill surfer dude.
Yeah. Totally chill. He was on that day. You know, it's funny, going back to that Pilar at bat too, like you talk about playoff baseball being awesome and everything being awesome. Like his whole goal that at bat was not to get a hit, not doing anything. He goes, I was doing everything I could do just not to strike out. And that's such team baseball. Like when you get in a moment like that, like all the other stuff forgets. I was like one of the pure moments of baseball, which I thought was really, really cool to be a part of.
Well, thanks for reliving that. I mean,
Yeah, that's awesome to be on. Like, one of the, I mean, how many people actually say they're at the game? I mean, what does it hold? 50,000?
48,50, yeah.
I feel like 100,000 people said they're at the games.
Like, Leap, I'll tell you this right now. A friend of mine who actually played in a Stanley Cup final at one point in his professional hockey career said to me the next day that that was the greatest sporting event he'd ever been to. This is a guy who played in Stanley Cup final games.
That's really cool. And like, as a guy who's been in baseball my whole life, to be in moments like that, like, you realize, and again, I'm a spectator, I'm a coach, like you realize how cool that is, because there's so many minutes and so many days and years of your career that are nothing like that. It's like your reward for like going through all the bus rides and all the things, and to be a part of that. That's really neat. And that's really cool when guys say that, especially when players, and it does, it takes everybody back to being a little kid and being a fan again, even though you're involved in it. And that's, you're very, very lucky and very fortunate in professional sports when you get a chance to do that.
We'll get Hugh into studio and, sports versus spouses. Hugh's cooked a little something up. We'll keep Leap in for this one. Sports versus spouses. I'm interested to see where he takes this one. We'll do it next. Hugh into studio, and for time purposes, we'll revisit sports versus spouses a little bit later, although they don't always have to go against each other, I don't think.
Not all the time. Most of the time.
You've got a memory from the seventh inning of Game 5 5 years ago.
Yeah, like you, I was there covering that game. And what Leap said kind of brought this to mind. He talked about the great shot of the camera shaking because, let's face it, the whole building was shaking. And I was up in the auxiliary press box, and you could feel it up there. You could literally feel the floor like kind of bouncing with everybody and all the excitement of everybody jumping up and down. I've been lucky enough to cover a few pretty cool things in my career. That is absolutely right up there with Italy winning the World Cup back in, was it 2006 or 2004? Whatever year they won, I was in the middle of St. Clair with 500,000 people. That was pretty cool too, but the bat flip game was off the chain.
Well, Leap, I don't know what we solved today. I don't think you helped Ziggy at all. It's now a little less or a little more than 2.5 hours until he's got to swing at this 90-mile-per-hour fastball.
How long does it take to get to Vaughn from Muskoka?
A lot less time than it takes for a 90-mile-an-hour fastball to get in on your hands.
If you left now, Leap, at 7:55 in the morning, you could be there for 10:30, I think.
Yes, we could.
It's not Toronto. You're going to the city above Toronto.
When I first moved to Canada, that was like the greatest jingle ever.
You know it. See? Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
The city above Toronto, the city of Vaughan. I'm singing it to myself right now.
Ziggy might have been 8 years old when that was going on, though.
Yeah, he's almost 40, Leap. Don't let him believe he's that young. We'll invite you back next Thursday if you ask nicely.
Can I come back, please?
Yes.
Of course. Thank you.
We'll do a full hour. Oh, Silent Vic chiming in.
I might be in Florida.
Where?
Florida.
All right. Okay. Well, remember, if you go down there and you come back, you got to quarantine for three full weeks. Three full weeks.
Quarantine for like 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. At Casa del Leap.
Yes.
In an unknown town. In Muskoka. We'll talk next week. Tim Leaper, former first base and outfield coach with the Toronto Blue Jays, with us for the 7 o'clock hour each and every Thursday here on Leadoff. It's David Amber for Justin Bourne. Anthony Stewart will be along. Hockey Central at 8:30. Some good chirps coming. Stewie's been very active on Twitter this morning. And up next, the cousin of Alex Pietrangelo, former NHL goaltender, Frank Pietrangelo. If you're old enough to remember the early 90s Penguins teams, he served as a backup to Tom Barrasso. He made some big saves in the 91 playoffs when he was forced into action. We'll talk about some of his great teammates, those Penguins teams, and so much more. Frank Pietrangelo, next.
And less than 2.5 hours away to our trip to the batting cage, where Ziggy will attempt to hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. We're taking as much advice as possible. I don't know if anybody has offered anything that can truly help. You got a thick beard going, Ziggy. You're a clean trim away from that Fu Manchu you're going to have to grow. The handlebar, the Pete Walker, the Sammy Cosentino.
I started from scratch, though, if I don't hit a ball. Like, I shave and then I grow it in for the week.
No, you can do that, or you can just shave around it, and it'll be right there on Monday morning. Right
you
there
want
on Monday
a thick
morning.
One, eh?
You want, just be honest about it. Wear it. Be seen. Wear it proudly. Who knows? You might stick with it if it's a good look for you.
Yeah, if it works.
If it works, if it's, I don't know. Get it up there on Tinder and get the see if the swipe rights see if the swipe rights increase. David Amber, Anthony Stewart at 8:30 for Hockey Central at 8:30, our weekly hit. Next up, Alex Pietrangelo just signed a massive contract to leave the St. Louis Blues, where he won the Stanley Cup, not this season, but last, with the Vegas Golden Knights. He's going to the city of Sin, or Sin City, for almost $62 million over 7 years. A huge contract, the biggest one handed out in the NHL this offseason. His cousin is a former NHL goaltender, won Stanley Cups with the early 1990s Pittsburgh Penguins. And we are pleased to be joined by Frank Pietrangelo right now. Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So we need to nail this down once and for all, because when I used to play road hockey as a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old kid, and the Penguins, you guys were an epic team back then, we used all of your names. And when you played, you were Frank Pietrangelo. Was that right or was that wrong? What's the right way to say your last name for once and all?
It is correct. It is Pietrangelo. But what happened was Alex decided to come along after the fact and change the name. And now it's all messed up. And I said many times, I said, when Alex wins a Stanley Cup, he can do whatever he wants. Well, he kind of called my bluff.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was right. It is Pietrangelo.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, I've always went with Pietrangelo, still do to this day. You know, Alex has gone by Pietrangelo, okay. And his family has. So, it's not simple. It's not Smith or Jones, obviously. It's open to interpretation.
So back in the 90s, is it the same as today? You get the cup for the 20. Was it the same? You get the cup for the 24 hours?
No, we never got the cup, unfortunately. That started the year after the second cup. I was with Penguins in 91, the first cup. And then the next year, the tradition started.
Oh, because I wanted to know what the difference was from your cup party days to the ones with Alex. I'm sure they're different because rules have changed.
Yeah, Frank, you had a kind of co-cup party, right? Alex included you in that, did he not?
Yes, I was up in King City at the golf course there. He had a private party there, and myself and my wife Kim were invited and went up there and spent the day with him.
With Frank Pietrangelo, former Pittsburgh Penguins goaltender, won the Stanley Cup with the Penguins team in 1991, and he is the cousin of Alex Pietrangelo, who just signed a massive contract with the Vegas Golden Knights. When you look back on some of your Penguins teammates, you must have realized, Frank, how good you had it at the time. But that was Mario in his prime. That was Jaromir Jagr breaking into the league. I think you had Joey Mullen, one of the greatest American-born players ever to lace him up. Kevin Stevens, Paul Coffey, like on and on. When you look back 30 years later, what do you think about?
Oh, just a great group of people. You know, like the one thing that always follows me is people say you win a championship and you become a family. And what I learned in Pittsburgh was, you become a family and then you win a Stanley Cup. So, you know, these guys that, you know, you didn't mention Paul Coffey and Brian Trotsche and Mark Recchi, and there were seven Hall of Famers on that team there, and just surrounded by a great group of people, great hockey players, but more importantly, great people. You know, we've all become like brothers, and obviously over the years, you know, you get back and get some laughs in or whatever, but it's that camaraderie and being able to you know, sacrifice for each other and go through a wall for each other. That's what makes a difference in winning championships.
I have to ask you about Tom Barrasso, because I was at training camp my first pro year in 2001. It might have been his last year, but I remember coming down in training camp and ripping one over his glove in. I came down the next time and the rest of practice, and he would just get out of the net, so I'd have nothing to shoot at. You got to have some stories for us.
Oh, Tom. He was one of a kind, that boy. You know, let's put one thing aside right off the bat. He was a good goaltender. Obviously, you know, you don't win two Stanley Cups if you're not a good goaltender. But there's more to it than just being a goaltender, and that's being a person and, you know, getting along and all the rest of the stuff. So we go along with a lot of Tom Barrasso stories. A lot of them aren't pretty.
No, well, I just remember back in the Ottawa days in the late 90s, I think it was the first of the four playoff series against the Leafs, he was asked some kind of question about some of the shots he was facing off Leaf sticks, and he said, "What do you want me to stop the ones going wide too?"
That was the king comment of all time. It was, "Oh, you got lucky with a couple of posts, Tom. Yeah. Do you tap your post after?" He goes,
"Oh, that was,
let me stop the ones that go wide as well." But he's dead. He was serious.
Oh, he was not having any of it. He was not having any of it. Does it change now, Frank? Like, it, all of that is in the rearview mirror. Is he a part of sort of the get-togethers you guys may have in this day and age when those cup teams get together and everything's cool, or do things still linger?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think anything lingers, because I think everybody respected, you know, Tom for you know, who he was as a hockey player. But I haven't seen him since we won the cup, really, to be totally honest with you. And we've had reunions for, you know, 20, 30, 25 year anniversaries, golf tournaments, whatever we do, go back to Pittsburgh. And the nice part about Pittsburgh is Mario still owns the team, right? So, you know, he reaches out to the guys who were part of things with him. But no, I've yet to see him, to be honest with you. So I don't know. Something must still be lingering in the air in Pittsburgh, I guess.
With Frank Pietrangelo, Alex's cousin and a cup winner with the 90-91 Pittsburgh Penguins. This is Leadoff. Two moments stand out to me in that 91 playoff series. You guys are playing the New Jersey Devils. Tom Barrasso has gotten hurt, and you're starting an elimination game in New Jersey, and you make, and it's on YouTube, you make the save. All you got to do is type in Pietrangelo, Stastny, Penguins, Devils. That save is going to come up. What do you remember from that moment? You kind of lunged back across the crease and made a glove save, robbing Peter Stastny, who had a wide open net.
Yeah, the save, immortalized in Pittsburgh. Some great memories and something that, you know, I'm very proud to be remembered by, obviously. Just a little background on that game. Obviously, Barrasso was hurt, but Paul Coffey also suffered an injury. He didn't play that game. We lost game 5 at home. So we're going into Jersey for game 6 down 3-2. And it was my first playoff start. For me, I took it as it was just a great opportunity. I had nothing to lose. It was, you know, a chance to play in the playoffs. We all dream of this, you know, outside walk on the streets and, you know, living as youth. And here's a chance for me to play in an NHL Stanley Cup playoff game. And in that situation, believe it or not, I took the penalty. We were shorthanded, so I shot the puck over the glass. So we're shorthanded, and yeah, there it was. It was a shot. It was deflected in front of the net. My son, Dylan, who's also a former goaltender, always tells me, "Terrible rebound control." I told him, "Yeah, but the save would never have been made if it was such a great rebound control there." So anyway, the puck popped out and, you know, just desperation, reached back and it ended up being a big save in the game, and maybe gave the Penguins, you know, we all had faith in each other, but maybe a little belief that, you know, maybe things are meant to be here, which I think the Stars do have to line up for a team to win a Stanley Cup. And this was just one of the things along the road, right?
And then the second thing that stands out to me from that run is the goal that Mario scored. Sean Chambers, the Minnesota North Stars defenseman in the Stanley Cup final, he must still be looking for his jock strap. That goal by Mario, Deacon in and out, it lives on in highlight packs to this day.
And rightfully so. And there's a statue out front of the Pittsburgh Arena of that exact same play as he splits the defenseman there and then goes around John Casey. But Mario was just a unique, unique person and, you know, just a great player. But the things he faced, he was injured half his career. He fought cancer while he was playing and everything else that he did. But when he played, and the rules are different now. Obviously, you can't hold, you can't clutch and grab and, a lot of the stuff that was they were getting away with back then. But the players weren't as big or strong, and Mario came in. He's 6'4" and 200-something pounds, and nobody could control him the way he skated. And, they just had to grab him everywhere they went. There's a great highlight. I forget when it was from, what year, but we're playing in Nordiques in Quebec, and there's like four guys holding him up, and he just kind of kept going right through them. So Mario was a great hockey player, one of the best to ever play the game, obviously, and, it was a pleasure being able to play with him.
Frank Pietrangelo, our guest, cousin of Alex. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So no doubt Alex was the biggest free agent signing of this free agency. Did you have any sense from any conversations with him that it wasn't going well with his negotiations with St. Louis?
No, I didn't. And us as family members or whatever, that's not our business really to pry into what is best for Alex. He made no bones about it. He wanted to stay in St. Louis. His wife is from there. It's the only place he's ever played. He was drafted by the Blues, won a Stanley Cup, was the captain, lifted the cup and everything else. And there was no doubt that that was his first choice. And he was transparent about that. He put that out in the media. He talked about it with the press, and that was his goal. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. We all know what the salary cap era is like. Being here in Niagara, we got the Toronto news every night, so we know how strapped you. And I think St. Louis, it was just time, I guess, for a change. But we all figured it was down to the 3-4 teams you're talking about, the Leafs being one of them, and probably Boston, Vegas, and St. Louis. And he did what was best for him.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about coming to Toronto and if there was any kind of pressure. A lot of guys at some point in their career want to go back home, and usually it's at a family lunch or a birthday party in the summertime where you kind of float the idea around, hey, the free agency is coming up. Wouldn't it be great if I came back home to a good team, right? This Leafs team kind of has everything, just needs that next player to push them over the top. And if there was any kind of talk or how close the Leafs were.
Well, you're right 100% there. I think that Alex is exactly the player that the Leafs needed, in this offseason. They've done a pretty good job with what they've picked up, don't get me wrong. But, he's an established superstar in the NHL and a right-handed shot on the point who can just do about everything. And he would have been a perfect fit here. I've had conversations in the past with his dad, in particular, Joe, just talking about things in general. And this is back when Babcock was still here, that, when he had to renew his contract, that, this would have been a great place to play. He played for Mike in the Olympics and in the World Championship or whatever it's called, the World Cup. And so there was a good familiarity there with each other and some trust there. So, and he's a Toronto boy. I mean, who the Toronto guys, I don't know anybody who wouldn't want to come back and play home. But with that comes a lot of added pressure, a lot of added, outside factors, right? There's a lot of things to take away from your focus. So I don't think it'd be the easiest thing. I've never had an opportunity to do that. I think it would be great, but I think it would be very difficult at the same time.
Do you remember, Frank, when you played? Of course, the Leafs didn't get good until 92, 93. And for kids, and I was a kid at the time, that seemed to come out of the blue. Do you remember what the conversations were like among Ontario-born players in other cities, the idea of playing for the Leafs back then?
Well, I think everybody grew up watching the Leafs. You guys remember when we were younger, we didn't have the 15 games on every night. You had your game of the week on Wednesday or Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, of course. So those were the only games you saw. And who did you see? Well, you saw the Leafs. if the Leafs were playing away, maybe you got a Habs game or whatever. So everybody grew up watching the Leafs and idolizing those guys. And regardless of the teams were, you know, great, bad, what, it didn't really matter. Like, you know, your grandfather, your father, your brother, everybody was a Leafs fan. So, you know, everybody wanted to be part of the Leafs organization. Myself, I grew up the other way around. I was a Buffalo fan. Same idea, local, watched them on TV and everything else and got to go to a few games. My dad would get some tickets here and there and bring me and my brother down to watch the Sabres play. But once again, local, it's something you could see on TV. And, you know, times have really changed nowadays. You know, obviously me being a Penguin fan, being a former Penguin, I watch every game because everything's on TV. But we didn't have that luxury when we were kids.
Frank, we appreciate you doing this morning. Great insight on Alex, great memories of your time with Pittsburgh. I can't believe it's been almost 30 years, but here we sit. we get older each and every year. We'll certainly turn to you again. This was a great chat. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike, Scott. Thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. Frank Pietrangelo, cousin of Alex, and won the first Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh back in the 90-91 season.
Didn't bite on the Tom Barrasso, huh? It's got to, like, he didn't want to go there. He just figured there, I mean, you could have given us a little something.
Well, yeah, Tom Barrasso, there were people who like to put the L-E on the end of that last name, right? I mean, there were people who would had the nickname for him, right? But he was a great goaltender.
Yeah, he was great.
Sometimes the most successful people are you-know-whats, right?
My first time meeting him and training with him was actually on an off-season workout on the track. Him and Rod Brind'Amour came out, and I just got drafted, and I went down for like a four-day mini rookie draft, you know, newly drafted player training camp in July. And yeah, I remember him training with us, and it was pretty neat. I mean, you hear the stories. You remember him back from the Pittsburgh days. I was a huge Mary Lemieux fan growing up, so I remember those teams, back-to-back cups. And yeah, then at training camp, got to shoot against them. And, you know, I always remember that comment from Ottawa.
See, I'd forgotten the question, Ziggy,
So the question was, hey, Tom, you got pretty lucky today. It was like three goalposts.
Right, couple
that,
goalposts.
Like, he was clearly beat. And he's like, so you got pretty lucky there. You know, do you thank your goalposts after you have a game like that? And he like didn't stop, didn't think about it, wasn't joking. It was, do you want me to stop the ones that go wide as well?
You want me to stop the ones going wide? Like, just, yeah, I'll like, never forget it. Deadpan, laser eyes, yes. Burn a hole through the person who asked the question. Just.
So that's, and I heard about, hey, like, not too often do you hear from other players like, hey, don't go high with Tom. Like, he's not going to like it. I've seen him fire pucks back at players. I've seen him swing his stick. And I remember, I'm just so like jacked up. It's my first training camp with the Hurricanes 2001. And I absolutely rip one by his ears, and he did not have it the rest of practice for me.
Wasn't interested.
No.
Not taking shots from a rookie.
You got to shoot low, and you got to shoot from out wide, and you can't come down the middle or get a better angle. And
if you hit this 90-mile-an-hour fastball today, I might pull the Tom Barrasso.
I'm going to try to rip one off your ears. Believe me. I am going to like bring my twig out that I played with that I do not bring out very often.
And just go to town. I might Barrasso you.
I'm getting our best two UFT shooters, and they shoot really hard. So I'd be worried right now.
Okay. I'm going to pull the Tom Barrasso. I'm going to wear a Barrasso Penguins jersey, and I'm going to skate away. No, I'll wear a Barrasso Hurricanes jersey, and I'll skate away. We've got some breaking news involving Joe Thornton. I'm going to leave it there. And we'll break that news when Anthony Stewart and David Amber join us next. This is a selection from DJ Stewie. Mr. McMahon's entrance theme, No Chance in Hell. I don't know what this is about, but I got three guesses, and I don't think I'll need two of them.
How does he find time between doing somersaults and acrobatic handstands with his skates on to find these things and to tweet certain pictures and GIFs is what I want to know.
Well, I just think that song's very appropriate for today's occasion because you have zero chance in hell of hitting getting a hit off of a 90-mile-an-hour pitch. Yeah, 50, maybe 60, Ziggy, but 90, I don't know who you're kidding. So unless you do the Happy Gilmore where you stand right in front of home plate, you're striking out like a stanza, baby.
That's such a great line. You brought up that GIF, Stewie. It took me right back. Derek Jeter giving Paul O'Neill, or excuse me, George Costanza giving Derek Jeter and Paul O'Neill hitting tips in the cage, and Jeter looks at him and says, "You know, we won the World Series," and Costanza smirks in six games. Like, you didn't sweep them, so you need my advice.
Yeah, I might cut my figure skating training today short just to make a trip to Vaughn and watch this, and get some gifts ready.
Dude, you're welcome.
Yeah,
you are welcome.
Come on down. We might have a helmet big enough, and you can get in the cage yourself, Stewie.
Oh my God! All right. Well, you want to go back and forth? I'll play moderator. David Amber and I'll play moderator. If you two want to go back and forth. Just cut each other up.
I'll save it for Twitter.
Yeah, of course.
Keyboard.
Hey, Ziggy, you'll have your fun because in a couple of weeks you're going to see Stewie and a bunch of sequins, dancing around on the ice. It's going to be quite a sight to see as well.
I can't wait for that. I might be live tweeting during the shows.
Please do.
I got to come see this batting cage thing, though. I wouldn't mind coming and taking a few swings, too. You guys are doing that today, I heard, right?
At 10:30 this morning up in Vaughn. I can send you the 411, the info, yeah, the address, everything. You're welcome to. But you got to understand that you got to sign a waiver, David, and understand that anything that you do could be televised. Like, you're... This is not...
Where is he doing it? Is he doing it at the Ashley Schaefer BMW, or...
Oh, this is good. I like it. I feel like I'm just sort of sneaking in here, and...
This is what it's like.
David, do you think, first of all, before we get into the hockey stuff, do you think Ziggy has any chance at 90 miles an hour?
I won't be as emphatic as Stewie, but, you know, I said this last week when I was on. I said, I don't think he's got a shot. But, listen, the guy's a pro athlete, and I'm just a civilian, so I'm not going to sit here and say there's not a chance. But it would be highly unlikely. 90 miles an hour is fast. Hitting a baseball is probably one of the hardest things in all of sport, right? Right? If you do it successfully 3 out of 10 times, you can go to the Hall of Fame. So that's all you got to factor in. And 90 miles per hour is a legitimate... You know, that's a major league. Well, it's an off speed pitch, I guess, in the majors. But you know what I'm saying.
Well, like, Ziggy, I owe you a Swiss Chalet dinner. So let's double or nothing, and maybe do a Barbarians dinner.
Okay.
If you hit it,
I'm in for that.
A little.
What
Barbarians.
Do I have? Are you gonna? We're keeping it at 90. How about doing something lower, like at 70? Because you said I couldn't hit over 60, right?
I'll set the line at 80. So if you go 79, yeah, we'll. You gotta hit at least 80. Let's go.
All right. There we go.
Well, and if you guys are going to Barbarians, I'm joining. I'll pay for myself, but I never pass up an opportunity to go to Barbarians.
Brian Burke gave me a gift certificate, so if I lose, I'll just be paying with that. So.
Imagine that. Ziggy thinks you're paying for this big elaborate dinner at Barbarians, and then right at the end of the night, you go for your wallet, and it ain't the Amex. It's the Barbarians gift card. There you go. That would be a play.
He's re-gifting. There's another Seinfeld for you. You can't re-gift.
Yeah, you can't re-gift. Yeah. You can't re-gift.
The label maker.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Tim Watley. Tim Watley and the Label Maker. This is Hockey Central at 8:30. David Amber in for Justin Bourne this morning. Anthony Stewart is here. We got to get to this Bill Foley situation with the possibility of an all-Canadian division in just a second. But the breaking news, Simon Zenberg out of Europe is reporting that Joe Thornton has just signed with HC Davos. Now, Thornton is 41 years old. There's some talks out there that he could be a target or is a target of the Maple Leafs. Guys, this makes sense, right? He's 41. He's into an extended offseason here. The San Jose Sharks were not at all part of the bubble. It's been March since he played a competitive hockey game. At his age, it's just an opportunity to get his legs underneath him in an environment with which he's greatly familiar. He's been over to Switzerland a number of times, including during the lockouts. David, start with you.
Makes sense for me. His wife's Swiss. He's comfortable out there. I think Stewie's played out in Switzerland. It's amazing. I think it's the best place you could be if you're not going to be in the NHL. And as long as he has an ability to opt out, if he gets an NHL contract, you're right. I mean, this makes all the sense in the world. Doesn't rule out the fact he could be coming to Toronto. Doesn't rule out the fact he could go back to San Jose or somewhere else in the National Hockey League. I expect he'll be in the NHL because I expect someone will take a flyer on him. I'm not sure the Leafs are the perfect fit simply because of, you know, it seems like redundant skills when you have Jason Spezza, a seasoned veteran who could take faceoffs and do a lot of different things and be a character guy in the room. But I definitely think it makes all the sense in the world.
Stewie.
Yeah, I think the fact that he's skating now and playing games now is that he's coming to the Leafs just based on the fact that, you know, you saw Patrick Marleau last year come off the couch to go to San Jose. But I think if he's preparing to come to the Leafs, you can't do that. You can't come off the couch. You've got to be ready to go. So I think that all but seals that he's coming to Toronto. So I'm not going to pretend I'm the insider with three R's. I'm not breaking anything. But the fact that at 41, he's training to get ready, I think he's coming back to prove a lot of people wrong. So I like the fit in Toronto just based on the fact that he can run a second power play unit. He's not a defensive liability. He's big. He's strong. He can get to the net. And he's a guy, if you want to go two or three playoff rounds, he can be one of those bottom six key factors that helps put you over the top.
I love Joe Thornton. I messaged a couple of his teammates, and they said for a guy in the room, he just livens it up. He's fun to be around. They think he can still play, but at the same time, I'm concerned about some foot speed and just 41 guys. Like, how many guys can actually play into their 40s? Usually you're great skaters, right? Patrick Marleau, great skater. And I think Joe's just, he's kind of slowed down, and having more than one of those veteran players in your lineup, I'm not so sure he would be a fit for the Leafs, but I'm with you, Stu. I think somebody's going to pick him up. I just don't know how many guys in today's game you can add, you know, at the end of your career. I don't know how good it would be for your organization, Stu.
Yeah, but you saw what happened in Dallas with Pavelski and, Corey Perry. Everyone thought they were done, and, you know, Pavelski, you know, I think almost set the record for American gold in the playoff series, and Corey Perry was a big, big factor. So, this team has speed to burn. You know, they got some high flyers in Marner, Matthews, and Hyman can skate and fly. So I think for that bottom six, they just need to get back to, you know, typical bottom six hockey. Get pucks deep, you know, kill good penalties, and not be a defensive liability. So I like the Thornton because I think he still has game. Like, he's one of those guys. When I was at San Jose's camp, I think it was 2012, you know, everyone thought, you know, he wasn't the most skilled guy, you know, in drills. But you put him in a game, he knows where to go. He knows how... when to turn the, you know, whatever jets he has on and when to sort of cruise. He's one of those guys that slows the game down to his pace. So he's a beast out there. But I think just from the fact that he's a leader, he's one of the most well-respected guys in the NHL of all time, where, you know, I said this yesterday, coaches, you know, sort of ask Jumbo, is it okay if we bag skate everybody today? Because they don't want to, you know, get him irked. So I like the addition. So I think he'd be a good fit in Toronto, but at the same time, too, as David Ling used to say, guys used to say to David Ling, give the young guys a chance.
Well, I don't, and I take somewhat exception, Ziggy, to the fact that you think 41 years old is old. I mean, I may have gotten up to go to the bathroom in the last commercial break and both my Achilles tendons were sore, but 41 years old is still ruggedly, ruggedly young.
We're going to see old at the batting cages today, I'll tell you that.
Ziggy's not even 40 yet. He's got no excuses.
I mean, 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see him butt. I want to see him lose a pinky.
Yeah, you like that bunt. I think it's a good idea. I got told that yesterday. Hey,
yeah, do it.
Just go
yeah,
and bunt one. You need forward motion. That's it.
It's going to be the worst.
Right off your teeth.
Yeah, it's going to be the worst. Oh, yeah, he'll bunt it right up under his chin, too. Yeah, no question. There are many ways that could go wrong. I'm worried about you, David, because I know that, you know, the word's out at work that you have your heart invested in all seven Canadian NHL franchises. And so if they end up in the same division the way that Vegas owner Bill Foley suggested they might and repeatedly suggested they might on a Las Vegas radio station yesterday. Mm-hmm. Man, I don't know. You're gonna have to find some severe objectivity here. I think this is great. It so much makes sense from a COVID-19 perspective. But now, if it doesn't happen because it's been put in my mind, I'm gonna be disappointed. I think the angst. I think the lack of civility. I think it would generate a whole different level of interest among the individual fan bases of these seven teams if it were to happen.
Well, listen, I only care about our interest, and it would be phenomenal for Sportsnet, our interest in the games. I mean, every single matchup could be a Canadian-Canadian matchup. And you're right, during COVID, we don't have a choice right now. I mean, you can't cross the border. They're not going to go and invest in the bubbles, and you can't even do the cross-border bubbles. So it makes all the sense in the world. I'm anticipating that's what we're going to see in this upcoming year as a 17 Canadian division. And it would be phenomenal. And I guess we'd be guaranteed one Canadian team into a conference final, which is something we haven't seen on a regular basis, you know, for the last decade. So that would be phenomenal. That would also be very competitive, guys. I mean, here's the scary thing. If you're a Leaf fan, look at the improvements Montreal's made. Look at the improvements Calgary's made. There's been some tweaks for Edmonton as well. You know, Vancouver's still a very strong team. I know there's been some subtractions there, but, you know, Braden Holtby and Nate Schmidt, and they might still have something up their sleeve. That would be a very competitive division. The Jets have added Paul Stastny. You know, if only the top four of those seven make the playoffs, it would be a dogfight for those third and fourth spots, I imagine, in the All-Canadian division. It would be phenomenal theater. It would be very interesting. And think about all the great young stars in the games that would be competing in that division, when you look at the Matthews, the McDavids, the Draisaitls, the Scheifele's, et cetera. I love everything about the idea. I think it'll be phenomenal.
So yeah, I think it'll be great, too. Could you imagine now the War of Alberta, where they're playing three times in four nights? Because there's going to be a lot of back-to-backs, three and fours, fours and fives. And, you know, maybe a back-to-back Toronto-Montreal Saturday night. That brings me back to my childhood, watching Toronto versus the Habs on Saturday night. You know, that's amazing TV. So for us, you know, especially David, he loves the Canadian teams. He's a big company guy. I know John C. Sports Nettington's listening, so he's pumping his tires. He wants the company to do well, and all the Canadian teams playing in division. I think it's going to be great for ratings. It's going to be entertaining, and you're going to get some of these rivalries back, like that Toronto-Ottawa that I remember as a kid watching, being like, man, I can't wait to get to the NHL and play for the Leafs and, you know, beat up on, you know, the Ottawa Senators as well.
Yeah, think about how good that division would be, guys. That would be a phenomenal division. It would be, the rivalries would be great. Imagine, as you said, Toronto, Montreal. Imagine that eight times in the course of 4 months.
Oh God,
awesome! I'll put you guys on the spot, Stu. We'll start with you. Where do you rank the Canadian teams from top to bottom? And this is Scotty's idea. Go ahead.
Toronto number one. Then go with the rest.
I'm gonna put Toronto at the top.
Thank you.
I'll go Montreal, then I'll go Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, Ottawa. Did I forget anybody? Vancouver. No, Vancouver's in the middle somewhere, so I'm not going to go back and redo my work. So put Vancouver somewhere in the middle.
You know what, though, Stewie? And not to throw you under the bus, but just because, let's send that clip to Sportsnet 650 Vancouver. Just because there's nothing I appreciate more in my life than the rage of Western Canadians when they think a Torontonian has forgotten about them.
Vancouver Twitter is the worst. If you think Toronto Twitter is bad, you say something in Vancouver. I still got people trickling into the battle from like 3 months ago saying, what do you mean Markstrom's hurt? I'm like, that was like 3 months ago. I'm done tweeting about that. I tweeted 16,000
I've run through my entire Rolodex of GIFs on the Markstrom injury. Leave me alone. Rank them, David.
I'm going to put Ottawa 7th and everyone else below them.
Okay.
This is an impossible exercise. I mean, it's just so hard, right? There's too many variables there. I have a hard time, you know, saying this team's better than that team. I don't know. I think they're honestly fairly interchangeable, right? Like, we saw Montreal, how good they can be when, you know, Shea Weber takes over games and Carey Price is playing at his best. I mean, you'd be wrong to just slot them 5th or 6th. I mean, they could be the best team in Canada, but there's a lot of variables there. Toronto certainly showed us at times last year. They could be one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. So, I'm going to cop out a little bit on that question. I think Ottawa obviously is in a different position than the other 6. The other 6 to me could win a Stanley Cup. And the other 6 could lose in the first round or not make the playoffs. That's how close it is. I really think that much parity is in the league right now. And that's an impossible position to try and accurately presume anything. But, you know, Berkey did this. We did this during the playoffs. And Berkey went and he surveyed. He went and talked to GMs and people at different teams. And they all had Toronto slotted number 1. Now, this was pre-free agency, pre-draft. So maybe things have changed. But, you know, a month ago, Berkey had Toronto at 1 and Ottawa at 7. I would say Ottawa holds at 7, but the other 6 teams, I'm not putting my neck out there right now.
Stewie, before we let you guys go, you were big on this yesterday, and I'm looking for my ally here. I think the circle beard is the right way to go. If Ziggy loses his
bet. Go, talking about the circle beard. He thought it was like a little little thing goatee there, a little Brad Pitt. No, I'm talking about going from head to the bottom of your neck. You got to go. That's like the throatee going there, too. So I think you should go throatee. That's the next step. Not the goatee, the throatee.
Do it, Scotty, do it. I'll take you to Barbarians. I'll pay for you without a gift card at Barbarians if you could go there with the circle beard?
Oh, the circle beard.
Imagine. That would be hilarious. Everyone that gave that got gift cards from Berkey, we go around, run like a $10,000 tab with all gift cards. They had Berkey for life.
The waiters just stare you down. This was great, boys. Thanks for the fun this morning. We'll do it again next week, and we'll keep you posted on how today goes at the batting cage. If you want to go, let me know. DM me, and I'll shoot you the address.
Yeah, if you ever strike Sorrell, I'll try to get out the run.
Good luck, Ziggy. You're going to need it.
Thanks, bud.
All right, David Amber and Anthony Stewart. Hockey Central at 8:30. Hugh will jump into studio. We'll get you set for a good show, and we'll offer up some final thoughts. T-minus like 1 hour and 40 minutes.
I might need a nap after the show. Could I have like half hour to nap before I come?
You can nap. I don't care what you do between now and 10:30. You know where you need to be at 10:30 this morning. And you know what that is? You need to be in the city above Toronto. The city of Vaughan.
I'm north of the city, too.
That's nice. Hugh in studio next. Dan in Georgetown on the text line, 590-590, $100 that Ziggy has car issues. On the way to the city above Toronto, the city of Vaughan.
My gas tank is a little low.
Fill it up.
We can come get you, Zig.
Geez, that alternator. Pistons. They're
my 2010 Jeep Laredo is running fine. Thank you, everyone, for your
sure
concern.
Sure was. We could tell that when you ripped out of the parking lot at Wooden Sticks.
We got
the horn works.
We got some breaking news out of the NFL. What's this? Yeah,
the Falcons have shut down their facility.
Oh, good.
After
they suck.
Number of tests.
If they disappeared, would it matter?
It might just be we don't want to play anymore.
Dan Quinn got out of there at the right time.
Yeah. So here we go again. Over to you, NHL or NFL schedule makers.
The difference with the Falcons is that anybody who's got them on their schedule upcoming, they were going to win anyway. So it's easy forfeiture.
This is true.
They want to change the rules.
That is kind of brutal, though. Like a team comes down and then all of a sudden your schedule gets thrown out of whack.
Yep.
At some point, they're going to have to do something where, hey, if you have a certain amount of players come down and we have to move your game, you take the L. That's it.
In a forfeiture, nobody gets paid, though. That's the only thing. That's part of the clause of their contract for this year. If there is a forfeiture, neither team.
So it is in everybody's interest for those games to be.
Yeah, they want the games played. They're going to do anything they can. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're headed to a batting cage in Vaughan, and this will be all over social media next week. But we will tell you what goes down at the batting cage in Vaughan when we are back. Tomorrow morning, can Ziggy hit 90 miles an hour off a pitching machine? We'll let you know at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Have a great Thursday. Good show's next.